studio, I'm not surprised. For many people, the hardest thing about writing is just sitting down and getting the work done day in, day out. National Novel Writing Month is an attempt to help budding authors overcome writer's block. They had to commit to writing every day this month toward a cumulative goal of 50,000 words. Today's the final day. Let's find out how it went. Richard Crawford of Dixon took part. He joins us. Richard, welcome to Insight.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm interested to know how it went for you this month. Have you written your 50,000 words?
I did. I actually reached about 53,000 words. So.
My goodness. Well, how does that compare to your normal output?
I normally put maybe 500, 600 words a day when I'm working on something.
And what kind of projects do you work on normally?
Normally, I write short stories. I've got a novel in the works that is actually the remnants of my 2005 NaNoWriMo project. I'm still editing that and hopefully turn it into something readable.
NaNoWriMo being the abbreviation, the short version of National Novel Writing Month, just in case people didn't put two and two together there. So the novel that you're working on, is that the novel that you worked on this month?
The novel that I'm working on now, well, it's kind of on hold right now for this year's new novel.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Also with us is another local writer who took part in National Novel Writing Month. She's Sarah Stevenson, and she lives in Modesto. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Well, how did National Novel Writing Month go for you? Have you made it?
I'm still going. I got to about 45,000 so far, and I'm actually very happy with that because it's been a very busy month for me, so I'm pretty pleased.
Is it even realistic to write 5,000 words in what's left of today?
I'm not sure, but I'm going to try.
Really?
I will try.
Yes. Let's hear how this how you both of you worked set about doing this. What was your routine, Richard? How did you approach this on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I do have a day job from 8 to 5, and then I got several commitments during the week, so I usually wound up just kind of sneaking some writing time when I could. At lunch or on my breaks, and at night, I'd usually try to punch out as many words as I could. And then, of course, on the weekends, I'd sit down in a cafe or a bookstore and write as much as I could.
So sneaking in writing during your lunch break and so on, do you have a notebook computer that you take around with you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And how does that work for you, basically, you know, looking for opportunities in the day to write as opposed to being able to set aside several hours?
I'm kind of used to writing here and there whenever I can. I don't require to have large blocks of time that I can dedicate just to writing. So it worked out pretty well for me.
Do you need to get into it? Well, I guess you don't need to get into a flow because you start and stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Sarah, tell us how you fit this into your normal life.
Well, I'm a freelance writer and artist normally, so I always have a number of projects going. In that sense, it was like just adding another project to the long list that was already going. So some days ended up being more like what our other guest was describing with finding time at night or in between other things to write. And other days when I had less going on, I was able to spend a lot of time during the day to write.
But as a freelance writer, I would have thought that that you were probably quite good at forcing yourself to do the writing that you need to do.
From time to time, yes. I mean, everybody, I think, gets subject to other things going on in their daily lives. So.
Yeah. Well, we asked both of you, Richard and Sarah, to read samples of your most recent work for us. But let's first of all bring into the conversation Chris Beatty, who's director of National Novel Writing Month. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Where did the idea for this come from?
Well, you know, it was back in 1999, and it was here. I live in Oakland, California, and so that was kind of at the height of the dot-com boom here in the Bay Area, which meant that there were really a lot of very bad ideas around at the time, and I think National Novel Writing Month, the idea of writing a 50,000-word novel in 30 days, sort of fit in pretty well with the with the zeitgeist, where I just kind of proposed the idea to a group of friends. None of us were really aspiring novelists. I think we all just loved books and thought it would be kind of a great over-caffeinated adventure to set out together and try to write our own.
Mm-hmm. Are you a novelist yourself?
I am now, thanks to the wonders of National Novel Writing Month. But otherwise, I do not. I don't write fiction, really. It's just every November is when I sit down and write another novel.
Well, what kind of writing did you do before National Novel Writing Month?
Well, I am also, like Sarah, a freelance writer, and I do nonfiction writing for newspapers and some travel writing as well for travel guidebooks.
Well, my question to Sarah was, as a freelance writer, I would have thought that you'd already have the discipline to be able to do the writing that you need to do. But is there a difference then between writing nonfiction and writing fiction?
Well, I think so. Actually, in some ways, I think it's harder as somebody who works with words on a day-to-day basis to kind of dive into this anything goes, you know, writing without editing mindset. I think that, you know, a lot of us, whether we are writers or not, have a very perfectionistic idea of, you know, the thing needs to be brilliant. It needs to, you know, every sentence should be gold. And really, that's not how you write a novel. If you try to write a novel with that sort of perfectionistic inner editor on your shoulder the whole time, you're really not going to get past, you know, the first chapter. And so what you really need to do in a first draft is just to kind of set aside those notions of perfection and just really dive into the joy of completion, of sort of building without tearing down, and just kind of letting these characters run amok and sort of, you know, chase after them with your pen in hand.
Sarah, could you talk to us as well about the difference between doing your regular day job writing and fiction writing?
Well, for me, I do a lot of fiction writing anyway. I graduated from an MFA program at Mills College 2 years ago, and so I'm kind of trying actively to get published anywhere I can. So I've been doing some article writing and some short story writing and that sort of thing. I've been doing a lot of blogging and book reviews, so it's like fitting one large long-term project in with all of these myriad of little things, and I think for me, it's just a matter of changing my mindset and getting myself ready.
Chris, could you do the math for us here? 50,000 words in a 30-day month would be what, about 1,600 words a day?
It's 1,667. That figure kind of gets burned into your existence in November.
Yeah. For those of us who don't write 1,667 words a day, well, I probably do, actually, but I don't think of it in those terms. Put that into context. What would that look like on a typical page of a paperback novel? How many pages?
Well, 50,000 words ends up being about a 175-page novel. So that would be sort of like a Catcher in the Rye or a Great Gatsby. It's a short novel. We don't use the word novella because it doesn't seem to impress people the way novel does. So it's definitely a novel, but a short one.
So if you complete the assignment, then you do actually have a novel.
Correct. I mean, I think what you have is typically a first draft of a novel, which is sort of a warts and all proposition, where there are moments of beauty and then there are moments of less than beauty, shall we say. But really, it's kind of a rough sketch of your book. And should you decide to, you can then take, you know, December or January to begin the rewrite process of kind of taking this collection of ideas and really kind of revising them to the next level.
So 1,667 words would be what, about 5 pages? Of a typical novel?
It's about 7 to 10 pages, yeah.
7 to 10 pages, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Richard, tell us about the novel that you were working on this month. Give us a short description of what it was about.
A very short description. Well, it's called The Return of Deacon Dread for reasons I'm not too sure of myself. And my wife says it's a classic tale of monsters, mysterious cults, weird creatures, and the women who love them.
Is she your publicist?
My wife?
Yes.
She does a good job.
could you read us a paragraph or so?
Yeah, this is one of the less beautiful paragraphs that that Chris talked about. Actually, it's kind of a couple of paragraphs.
Okay.
It's about a minute long. Is that okay?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
Just no naughty words.
No naughty words.
Okay.
All right, I'll edit them out. Finally, Zoe's fingers manage to grasp onto something solid, hidden beneath the shifting layers of concrete, a pipe or a tree root. She grabbed it with her left hand and tried to reach up and around to the right, but something had caught her right arm around the crook of her elbow and was dragging it down. She looked, her backpack. It had slipped off her shoulders and was pulling her arm down and her with it. "Don't you dare," she shouted at it. She pulled upwards, but the backpack, laden with books and notebooks, was simply too heavy. Grunting with frustration, she tried again, but she couldn't move her arm at all. The moaning of the creature below her became a cry. It sounded something like an animal in pain or a child screaming in righteous toddler's tantrum. She looked down into the hole. "Oh, my God," she said. The words came out unbidden. She had no idea that she had said anything at all. She couldn't really see what was beneath her. She got a sense of something huge, of several pairs of eyes, each of them larger than she was, and all of them belonging to the same face, surrounding a huge central mouth, wide open and full of teeth. It wasn't something that she really saw, just an idea that her brain sent to her. She had the sense that if she could see what it really looked like, she'd want to close her eyes and go to sleep forever. It was something that was really annoyed at having been woken up.
Oh, my goodness. I guess we'll have to wait till it comes out to find out what happened.
That's right. One of the best-selling authors.
Yeah. That sounds pretty polished to me. Was that something that you've already edited, or was this just part of the, I don't want to say stream of consciousness process, but just the act of just cranking the stuff out?
That was just pouring out words into my keyboard, yeah.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me.
Oh, thank you.
And Sarah, tell us what your novel that you've been writing this month is about.
Well, it's entitled The Latte Rebellion, and it's a novel for teenagers, a young adult novel. And in the book, two high school seniors hatch a money-making scheme so that they can take a summer vacation. So they've invented this idea of the Latte Rebellion, which is a fictitious movement for people of mixed ethnicity and who love coffee. And so their idea is to sell T-shirts on the Internet, but after making this website, it kind of takes off like wildfire, and they've ended up creating a nationwide student movement.
Wow, sounds interesting.
So in this scene, it takes place just before kind of a climactic moment in which the narrator is supposed to speak at a sit-in at her school.
Okay.
And it's probably about a minute.
Great.
I felt like I was in one of those terrible high school drama TV shows, and this was a slow-motion moment of truth when the main character walks down the hall, her heart or some sappy song beating in her ears. If this were television, pretty soon I'd be shocked back into reality with some kind of contrived good news. Somebody running up to me yelling, "Asha, all the teachers in the entire school came to the sit-in. There are news crews waiting in the quad to cover us on the TV station. You have to come quick." And then I'd rush out there and see all the teachers linked arm in arm, beaming and wearing Latte Rebellion T-shirts. All the kids who'd ever made fun of us or hadn't taken our cause seriously would be on the sidelines, grumbling because they didn't get to be on TV. Kaylin would have fallen on her behind in the mud just because. It would end with Miranda Carey and I riding around on everybody's shoulders and Don't You Forget About Me playing in the background. Then I snapped back to reality like a rubber band had been shot at my head. This was University Park High School, not the Breakfast Club. People were much less cool and more annoying, and at the same time much more savvy and strong and brave. Except I really didn't feel brave. As I stepped out of the building and into the bright, chilly sunlight, I hoped nobody could tell I was shaking.
Wow. Well, that caught my attention, too. have you edited that, or was that just as it came out?
It's mostly as it came out. I shortened a few bits so that it would fit, so that I could read it on the air.
I'd like to find out where you both got your ideas for your novels from, and to what extent those ideas just started and evolved as you started writing. Richard, tell us about where your idea for your Deacon Dread story came from.
I just kind of started writing on November 1st and just kind of waited to see what would come out. So I can't really say that I started with a very clear idea of where I was going to go with that.
Really?
Yeah, ideas just kind of came into me. I solicited some ideas from some friends of mine and my wife as well. She's pretty smart that way, too. But it's kind of hard to say where the ideas came from.
Well, what was in your mind as you sat down to write the first sentence?
What was in my mind?
Yeah.
I had an idea for a character called Deacon Dread. I had really no idea what he was, except that in the movie version, he'd be played by Sam Neill.
So you have that figured out.
I'm sorry?
You have that figured out already.
I've got the entire cast figured out at this point.
Good.
That's about all I can say, really.
Sarah, what about your idea?
Well, I had, for maybe for a few weeks, I had vaguely been thinking just the barest bones of an idea rattling around my head, and it was originally called The Brown Rebellion, and I had been wanting to write something about students of mixed ethnicity. My husband and I are both of mixed ethnicity ourselves, and I've noticed as a fan of young adult literature, there's not that many books dealing with that as a topic. So I had that in my head, and then I thought, as I started, that, well, maybe this doesn't start as something nationwide, something serious. Perhaps it starts as something very small and something very localized. So that's how that got going.
Is this the first time you've taken part in NaNoWriMo, Sarah?
Last year was my first year, and I joined a week late, and I got to 36,000 words and was pretty pleased with that.
So what was the secret this year? You added 10,000 or more.
I started on time.
And Richard, are you a veteran?
Yes, I am. I've done this this is my fifth time.
And have you made the 50,000 words each time?
Every time I have, yep.
Congratulations.
Well, you crank them out.
Thank you. Last year, I actually got to 75,000 words.
Richard Crawford is a writer who lives in Dixon. Sarah Stevenson is a writer who lives in Modesto. They're both participating in this year's National Novel Writing Month. It ends today. And also on the phone, Chris Beatty, the director of National Novel Writing Month. Chris, give us an idea we're hearing from two writers, but there are how many estimated taking part?
So this year we have 79,600 participants in our adult program, and then we have on a separate site, a young writers program for 12 and under writers and those taking part in a K-12 classroom, and there are 15,000 of those.
Well, that sounds like an awful lot of people. How do you manage this, if you do?
Well, we've kind of grown, I think, from, you know, in the early years, it was just sort of run out of coffee shops and my living room. And this year we became a 501c3 nonprofit, and we have a staff and, a good infrastructure in place now to kind of run what is almost like a sort of military operation. You know, with that many participants, you really need to make sure that the site is going to work, that all your ducks are in a row, and that that the event will come off as you want it to. And it's definitely been a learning curve. I mean, we've had some real snags along the way where you kind of throw open the doors and invite as many people as want to come, and sometimes a lot more people show up than you had anticipated.
Do people share the work that they've created in the month?
Some people do. As part of when you sign up, which is totally free, you get a little author profile that has an excerpt section, which you can use if you'd like to share part of your work with other participants. Some people actually blog their entire novels as they go. So every day's output goes up on their personal blog, which to me I think would really invite that inner editor way back into the process. But at the end of the month, in order to win National Novel Writing Month, and we already have about 10,000 winners so far this year, you just need to write a 50,000-word novel. It's all about quantity, not about quality. And at the end of the month, you upload a version of your novel to our site where it is counted by a computer script and then immediately deleted. So unlike most writing contests, which are kind of predicated on the idea of having judges and prizes, nobody actually reads these novels. They're uploaded completely anonymously, deleted as soon as they've been counted. And our prizes are also some of the probably worst prizes in the writing contest world, where you get a PDF of a winner's certificate that you have to write your own name on and a web icon. And then really the manuscript itself, and I think the experience is the true prize of the event.
What's the most words someone has written in a month? Do you know?
You know, every year we have people who do write multiple 50,000-word novels. This year we had at least two people who wrote three separate 50,000-word novels in November.
My goodness. Richard and Sarah, how does that sound to you?
Overwhelming.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that Chris, that would take a remarkable focus and an awful lot of time, preferably no day job, I guess.
I think it's no day job combined with an absolute Olympic level of typing skills that would have to deliver you that many novels in a month.
Joking aside, though, I've heard, successful, established writers saying that this is the kind of thing that they have to do in order to produce the work that they do. Is that part of the point of National Novel Writing Month, to instill proven, successful writing habits in people who want to be established, published authors?
Well, I think at this point, National Novel Writing Month kind of has two groups of participants. One of them is that group of people, that are kind of see this as a first step towards actually getting a publishable and sellable novel. And of that group, we're having more and more professional full-time novelists who do come to NaNoWriMo every year to just get a tremendous head start on their book, where, you know, they would be writing every day normally, but for 1 month they have a lot of company and there's a lot of momentum. I mean, it's amazing the energy that is unleashed when 79,000 people are all taking part in the same creative activity. So that's one group. And then I'd say the other group, though, are people really who just come to it for the challenge, you know, and they write a novel in the same way that they might do a crossword puzzle or play Scrabble or play video games even, where it's just something, it's a large challenge. It's something to kind of lose yourself in for a month. And it's just deeply satisfying, I think, to set such a tremendous goal for yourself and then to nail it at the end of the month. So I think that, you know, it definitely does instill great writing habits, and it also does move you along, you know, well forward on the path towards book production. But I think for a lot of people, it's really just monkey barrels of fun. It's just a wonderful way to spend a month.
Richard, what do you plan to do with the words you've written this month?
Well, I'm going to put it aside next month and finish up my current novel, the one that I put on hold for this month, and maybe in January and February revisit it and see if I can't polish it up a little bit.
But otherwise, it's finished.
Pretty much. I've got a little bit of tinkering left to do, a few more scenes that I want to write, and I'll be doing that at a gathering in Dixon tonight with some other writers in the area.
Okay, and Sarah, what do you plan to do with the words you've written this month?
Well, a lot like what Richard was saying, I would like to, I don't think I'm going to make it quite to the end of the novel, even if I do make the 50,000 words, but I would like to finish the draft and work on it some more, but I do have another novel that I'm currently rewriting. And I would like to get back to that.
Well, you're all very busy, and I admire what you've done. Richard Crawford in Dixon, Sarah Stevenson in Modesto, and Chris Beatty, the director of National Novel Writing Month. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.